KXRN-LP.
Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach.
Member supported.
KXFM
on 104.7.
All right, 8:03 is the time. It's the Mornings with Ed show. We welcome you to the program. And I've been waiting for this interview for quite some time. Mondays always means the artist corner where, and again, I started this thing because you could be living right next door to somebody who's talented and dedicated to their art, and you don't even really know it, man. You just don't realize what genius you're standing next to. And I know that you like the, I just said genius. We welcome this morning Malcolm Leisring into our studio. He is not only a local neuroscientist, but he created an 11-part rock opera just recently. Malcolm, welcome to the program today.
Thanks so much, Ed. I've always wanted to be on the artist who can get up before 10:30 a.m. corner.
They're few and far between, yes. I tell you. You've managed to make that adjustment there. Thank you for adjusting your schedule and getting up so early
for us.
No
worries.
Now, as a neuroscientist, you weren't up early in the mornings in the lab?
No, we know from research that getting a lot of sleep is important.
Now, the fascinating thing about you for me, well, there's so many things, but the fascinating thing is that you've written a rock opera. But let's first talk about the career as a neuroscientist.
Well, you could say I'm a failed rock star.
Okay.
And that science was my sort of backup career.
That's a pretty decent backup career.
You know what's interesting? Science and rock stardom are very similar in many different ways. I mean, they're both creative endeavors.
Right.
They're both involve publishing, either records or papers.
Right.
They both involve performances. I've been in front of larger crowds, you know,
right,
as a scientist than as a, as a rock star.
Okay.
They are collaborative. You're usually work in a group with other people.
Right.
And I think people sort of look up to both professions with no real merit to one of those.
I may be one of those people. It is, I am fascinated by both. And the fact that you're a neuroscientist, just yesterday, my girlfriend and I were discussing the right brain, left brain,
yes,
difference.
Yeah.
And that some people are equally both.
Yeah, you know what's very interesting about that, and it pertains to my case, and apparently my dad's case, who is a very talented jazz pianist who works his way through college and was a physician himself. So language is localized to the left hemisphere of the brain.
Okay.
And so what's weird about my experience of music is that I literally don't even hear the lyrics. I hear the melody line. I can tune into it, but right, my default is really on the musical side. So, I mean, I don't think it's a benefit at all. It's actually maybe a handicap in some ways.
Right.
And I know that the holisticness of, you know, a lot of music, you know, maybe I'm not capturing it, but in doing this album, I really had to grow in the sense that I was never tuned into the lyrical side. I was never tuned into that at all.
Right.
And suddenly I'm responsible for generating a story and,
right,
you know, writing lyrics. So it's really like, this is like a first draft, you know, for me as far as vocals.
So tell us the title of the rock opera you created.
So we ended up naming it The Fatalist.
Okay.
Has a lot to do with fate versus free will.
Okay.
Which is a deep philosophical debate.
Which is what makes this fascinating to begin with. So.
Right. Yeah. And you know what's interesting? Like I said, I don't usually come at music from the perspective of what's the meaning, what's the message.
Right.
And then one day somebody asked me, or I sort of asked myself in a conversation, you know, so what's this going to be about? So this is going to be a rock opera. And I knew for decades that this was going to be a pile of music that had been building up in my brain,
right,
that I was finally going to get out. And I knew it'd all be interwoven and stuff. And in the asking of the question, I immediately knew the answer. And in this case, it's a protagonist.
Right.
Who struggles with, you know, what's the world all about, and kind of, you know, delves into philosophy and then kind of concludes, oh my gosh, like there is no free will. We're in this,
right,
universe of billiard ball atoms, and, you know, there's only one past and only one future. And at the same time, he thinks he's cursed, right?
Okay.
And so, you know, things go wrong for him, and he, you know, thinks, you know, he feels very limited in his beliefs. And then he finds a solution in the dark side.
Okay.
So he somehow comes across black magic, excuse me. And he benefits from it in the sense that now he finally has something to believe in that brings him outside of his sort of limiting beliefs. So he now thinks he can do things he couldn't do before, but he erroneously ascribes it to the dark force or whatever.
Okay.
A dark force.
The darkness.
Right. And instead, it's really the fact that he's believing in something that's allowing him to sort of escape this way of thinking.
Let's let our audience listen to part one of this, just a few seconds of it, and then I'm going to come back to the conversation.
Sure.
And ask you a question about the structure of it. Now, when you're creating something like this, I guess I'm asking you the chicken or the egg story. Is it songs first and then the structure into the opera, or is it the structure and then you write the songs to fit your idea?
Well, that was definitely the first.
Okay.
Because I didn't even know what I was going to say.
Okay.
And I always come at it from a musical perspective. Usually it's just, hey, you know, I find a couple of things that sound good together, and then I usually just kind of park it and then wait until,
right,
you know, more inspiration or something. But in this case, I kind of had a weird experience in that I had the, you know, what was very odd about it. And it's interesting where creativity does come from, because there's the distinct feeling that I was compelled by the music itself to produce it or whatever.
Right.
As opposed to me being the prime mover, you know, like it's almost like it's coming from some other source.
Right.
And I remember like hearing this song in my head in the shower, and I'm like, for like decades,
right,
like it'll be in the back of my head in some part of my brain that never turns off.
You were the conduit for something else.
Right. And I remember even thinking, for a couple of points, like, is this even my music? Like, is this maybe some jingle that got in my head or
right,
something like that from some other source? And, you know, it's very interesting because it's like you think it would be a sense of ownership.
Right.
And yet it's not. It's almost a sense of
filtership. Am I filtering something?
Right. Or giving birth to something. It's like, you know, it's like it's part right, of me, but it's also its own thing.
Right.
You know.
So. Oh, did you consciously include arias, choruses, and recitations? I mean, is that something you have to include in an opera?
I didn't have any. I mean, I think in some cases, basically when I write a song, I have ideas from the musical side,
right,
you know, like, and I might have a melody line that occurs to me. So it's sort
okay,
of like the musical part of the vocals, but I didn't really have any content for it beyond one song called Back on My Feet Again.
Okay.
I just kind of had this certain.
That's the final chapter of this opera, right?
Right.
Okay. Now the second, can I say chapter? Because to me, it's a story.
Sure.
It's a well-told story. But to me, part two, you titled it Newton's number 39 curse.
Newton's curse.
Newton's curse.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I?
That was probably some.
Okay. So yeah. Newton's curse was the beginning of the understanding of I'm about to go into the dark side.
Well, Newton's curse was the protagonist's sort of coming to the conclusion that there is no free will in this universe, and you're sort of trapped in this billiard ball, you know, and Newton would be Newtonian mechanics, and yeah.
Well, let's hear a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Some say it's obvious there is a God.
Tell me about the musicianship here. What am I hearing there? Am I hearing your singing, your vocals?
No. Okay. So I did everything except the vocals.
Okay.
And, you know, the sort of running joke of my life is I've been looking for a singer all my life.
Okay.
And one day I decided to Google that.
Okay.
Can I find a singer online? And there's these amazing musicians that you can just hire online. And, right. and it's so I auditioned a guy in Germany, a guy in London, and then settled on Chandler Mogul,
okay.
who's in New York, and he did all the vocals. Super talented.
Very talented.
Yeah. Just and it, because it was an opera, it, you know, I always, this whole life, I always had, I guess I grew up with musicals.
Right.
And my mom always listening to them. And Jesus Christ Superstar was always like my, you know, the perfect one. And
right.
and so I always pictured, you know, that the guy who sings for my band has to be able to play the role of Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar.
That was originally Ben Vereen, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, yeah. I saw the original cast in 2000 in Reno, and I was like, oh, these guys are too old. And they just blew the roof off the place.
How
it was
awesome.
Amazing.
It was a fantastic troupe. That really
yes,
was.
Yeah, yes.
It really was. And so you mentioned that your dad also played the piano.
Yes.
Being a physician and a pianist, did he lean either way toward you, or kind of, I want you to be a double brain guy, a right and left brain guy too?
Oh, my dad... he begged me not to go to medical school.
Okay.
He didn't want to have anybody injured.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
I've got trembling hands for some reason.
No, he didn't want me to follow his path. He wanted to encourage me to follow whatever my path was, which was fantastic. Right. But it was interesting because I just naturally was interested in the brain and you know, science, and
right.
ended up being medically oriented,
right.
but not, you know, not medicine per se. And he was right. I would not have been happy as a physician.
Now, with that in mind, part three, your protagonist, it's called The Descent into Hell.
Yes.
Okay. So let's listen to that and talk about it on the other side here.
Sure.
That's a pretty good guitar there. That's really good guitar work there, by the way, first of all.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, and again, you studied guitar?
Well...
Or you just learned it as a kid, and
yeah,
then one
I
of those natural things.
Yeah, I started with piano, right. and then I remember learning guitar from the neighbor across the street, and I hated it.
Right.
And then one day I saw a guy playing guitar in my friend's, you know, garage, and he was really good. And I'm like, how long have you been doing it?
Right.
And he said 3 years, and I was like 13, and I said, well, I'll just give it 3 years and see what I can do. Right. He ended up replacing me in my band when I went to college, which is so weird. But anyway,
so tell me,
boy, the mix sounds horrible. And it's something I had to learn in this,
the process of making this, right?
And some of these were done when I didn't know anything, and some of them were done when I was more mature as a sound engineer,
right?
You know, but that one really got overcompressed or something. So
maybe it was me when I pulled it. It could have been just me. You know,
no, it's okay. Yeah,
normally.
Yeah, but as far as the story, you know, this is sort of just saying this idea that this guy's, you know, he feels like he's cursed and he feels like his life sucks and he's just going down this, you know, negative road.
Right. Where do our listeners find the entire thing? Where do we get The Fatalist?
So it's everywhere, basically. I use this thing called DistroKid,
okay.
which distributed it to Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, YouTube.
Okay.
And so basically with the title, The Fatalist,
right.
and Sonic Scientist is my, you know, running name band.
Okay. All right. It's your project. We're calling that your project. So Sonic Scientist.
If you Google that, you'll probably find it.
Right.
It's also available as a CD on Amazon.
Okay.
That's kind of new. And actually, there are different mixes, and I added one extra little musical interlude.
Okay. That's the right side of your brain again. They could use this.
Yeah.
All right. And I got it. Okay. Before we go, there's Cold Desire. After The Descent Into Hell is Cold Desire and Enough.
Now, Cold Desire I wrote when I was 16.
Okay. I was going to ask you.
Which was like last year.
Okay.
So, that's interesting because I didn't originally envision this one or the next song after it to be part of any rock opera. It just happened to work.
Now, as I listened to the song in its entirety, it has an angst to it.
Yes.
It has a definite angst, and you purposely kept that from the time you were 17.
Right.
No, I don't mean the angst itself.
Well, it didn't have it. It did have lyrics. It had like I remembered one or two lines.
Right.
That's all.
Right.
But then, but I like the general idea. In addition, I think specifically it was probably about some girl I felt angst about.
Right.
But the point in the opera was that when you want something that you feel like you can't have, it's like the worst feeling on earth.
You deliver it really well. Let's let the audience hear it before we go here.
Wakes inside of me the dream I've had for all my life. Ooh, I've been there all my life.
I got to tell you, this is the part of the opera where I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is all coming together now. This entire, now I'm getting it, I'm in. And you're fully ensconced in that moment and you're staying for the rest of the opera.
Right.
Brilliant. Yeah. I absolutely love the way it's structured, man. And I can't thank you enough for doing it that way.
Great.
I'm going to send our listeners to you one more time. Where do we find you?
Sure. The Fatalist.
Right.
Is the name of the rock opera, and Sonic Scientist is the name of me, I guess. And just with those two words, you can find it anywhere.
All right. We've been sitting in the artist corner today with Malcolm Leisring, who is the Sonic Scientist. If you forgot any of that or you missed it, it'll be up on our podcast page a little bit later on, the KXFM podcast page. Or you can just call me here. I'm happy to give you all that information. I can't thank you enough for showing up this morning early.
Yeah.
On time,
no,
fresh,
no worries.
Ready to go, man.
Great.
Malcolm, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks so much, Ed.
Bye.